Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. A lot to discuss today. Between his pre-draft news conference and interview with Jared Stillman, Barry Trotz spoke for roughly an hour yesterday. So we have a lot to sift through there, and we will do that throughout the program. Scott Wheeler, the Athletics NHL draft analyst, will join us in about 20 minutes to preview the first round of the NHL draft, which is on Friday. We'll have Jonathan Hutton on at noon. We have a lot to discuss, but gentlemen, if you will indulge me for just a few minutes.
Indulge.
And I have warned Willie and Derek and David that at first, what I'm about to say is going to make absolutely no sense. But I guarantee you, there is a point to
all
this.
So you're warning our listeners as
yes.
well. Yes. Okay.
So, as you know, I am a massive fan of The Simpsons, as is our fearless leader. By the way, happy birthday,
happy
Chase
birthday
McCabe.
Happy birthday, suit.
Happy birthday, Chase. There is a famous episode of The Simpsons. It's the 15th episode of the critically acclaimed fourth season. It's entitled I Love Lisa. It's a Valentine's Day themed episode in which Lisa Simpson, feeling bad for her dim-witted classmate Ralph Wiggum because nobody in the class is giving him a Valentine's Day card, she gives him a Valentine's Day card. And Ralph misinterprets the gesture and relentlessly pursues Lisa's affection. And it culminates with Lisa and Ralph attending a live taping of the Krusty the Clown show. And Ralph professes his love for Lisa on live television. And Lisa snaps at Ralph and says, I never liked you that way. The only reason I gave you that card is because nobody else did and I felt sorry for you. And then the scene cuts to Bart Simpson sitting with Lisa on the couch and watching a replay of that moment. And Bart tells Lisa, you can actually pinpoint the second when his heart rips in half. And Bart clicks the remote a couple of times, going frame by frame, until he lands on this look of extreme anguish on Ralph's face. Now, all of you again are probably wondering, Adam, why are you summarizing the plot of a Simpsons episode that aired more than 30 years ago? Because I saw that same moment play out in real life as I watched Jared Stillman's interview with Barry Trotz yesterday. I was watching the stream, and Jared started his program by saying that Trotz needed to make it clear whether he was prioritizing winning now or building for the future. Basically, pick a lane, Barry. And this is what Barry said to that question.
What is your number one priority? What is your number one priority when it comes to this? Is your number one priority the 2026 Predators? Or is it the 2028 Predators? The 2029 Predators? And I'm saying 26 is like the playoff season. Are you looking at this saying, hey, you know, our top priority is to put a team out there this year to go compete? Or is your priority, hey, let's build this thing up in the future?
Well, I can answer that pretty easily. My priority is right now. I want to get us back into a position where we're fighting for a playoff spot. That last year we didn't get in that position. I feel if we get off to a good start, we'll be in that position. If we get to the position where we get in the playoffs, I think we can add some things because we got lots of assets. We got kids coming, and we got draft choices, all that. So I'll continue to do that, but my priorities now, with the eyes to the future, that's not anything I haven't said in the past. But I want to get that winning feeling again back here in this organization. Last year was a tough year, so I want to get that joy back. That's priority number one.
Not a surprising response from Barry Trotz to that question, but you could actually pinpoint the second when Jared Stillman's heart ripped in half as he heard that response. Because Jared has been adamant that we should judge Barry Trotz only by what happens a few years from now when these prospects develop and hopefully become regular contributing members of the team. But he heard that yesterday, and I could see the look of extreme anguish on his face when Trotz said that. So I just wanted to take the piss out of Jared a little bit this morning. Mm-hmm. That's what this whole thing was about. But Willie, between, as I said, between his news conference and his interview with Jared, Trotz spoke for about an hour. He did not have a 25 to 30 minute opening statement this time, as he did at his end of season news conference. But as you sift through everything that you heard from Trotz yesterday, what was your biggest takeaway from Trotz's multiple media availabilities?
I thought he was much clearer with his message yesterday. I thought he was able to address the two lanes that we've been talking about. And look, I'm not in the pick a lane. I'll tell you right now. He's doing both. He's been saying he's doing both. And I don't, you have to tell me where you think one screws up the other. And that's what Jared followed up with, about 72 follow-ups after that answer. Seriously.
No,
I was like, Jared, move on to another topic. He was like, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? It's like, Jared, he played gotcha with him. And Trotz is very, very good at being patient with Jared as he does. And it was overall a great interview. Because once he got to some other things, there were some very good points. I really enjoyed the, what are you trying to do with Andrew Burnett this summer to adjust? And Barry Trotz has often talked about Andrew Burnett's a young head coach that needs to grow and get better. He says, I made a lot of mistakes when I was a young coach, and I was able to work through those and become a better coach who eventually won a Stanley Cup. To me, that's more interesting. But if you want to just play the sports talk, hot take, gotcha, pick a lane, Barry. Okay, we want to dumb it down? Fine. But I like nuanced conversation. I would like somebody to, and somebody could text me or anything, an example of who is being blocked right now. Tell me a prospect that you think is ready to play that is being blocked by anything they've done right now. And remember, we're just starting the offseason. There's going to be some moves here. Maybe a couple, probably not a lot. But if you want to tell me you're in one lane or the other and it's screwed up because you can't do both, tell me an example of why. Because anything that Jared asked, I didn't think that screwed up. Barry Trotz has said, I've got a group here. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys in the last year of their contracts, so there's a ton of flexibility on what to do with a big chunk of the roster. And I'll name the players. Michael Bunting, Eric Halla, Colton Sissons, Cole Smith, Michael McCarron. Those are just forwards. And let's go to the defensemen. Jeremy Lauzon, Justin Barron, Nick Blankenberg, all in the final year of their contract. You can keep them, you can move them. Lots of flexibility there. So this perception of, boy, you're loaded with all these contracts of 30-something. Not really. Not really. You've got a lot of flexibility there. And then tell me the people that are ready to come up. The guys he mentioned, Kemmel, Schaefer, Matthew Wood, David Etchard, those guys are likely not ready other than maybe some call-ups here or there. So I think it's set up so that you're covering both lanes. You're trying to win as best you can. Have a bounce back. Get the winning feeling back. Who knows what could happen. The chemistry hopefully can be better and you could win. And you're not jeopardizing anything about, as Jared said, the 2020. And Jared's vision is the right vision. He is going to be judged on what happens in 28 and 29. That's, to me, the bigger, bigger question. This year is maybe they win. Hopefully they bounce back. But if they don't, they're not doing anything that's going to jeopardize 28, 29.
I will offer a counterpoint. And okay. I want to hear what Derek has to say. This was a column written by Gentry Estes in the Tennessean based off of yesterday's news conference. Gentry wrote in part, quote, "We like to present rebuilding or not as a binary decision, and it usually isn't. For Trotz, it certainly hasn't been. He has dipped toes in both pools. As the Preds GM, he has traded away a ton of players for draft picks, but he also made those expensive signings last summer, and a year later, those signings, including an 8-year extension for Saros, are beginning to look like overreactions by an inexperienced GM to a 2023-2024 season that went better than anticipated. To state the obvious, it's not exactly a safe bet to be doubling down on an old team that's coming off a 68-point season and didn't seemingly change much other than getting a year older. But in fairness to Trotz, I don't think he's being naive or foolish. I think he's in a bind. There isn't much else he can say or do. He's stuck with this roster and those contracts for players past their prime. Sad truth is that the next few seasons set up to potentially get worse for the gray-haired Predators before things can start getting better with an influx of drafted youngsters.
Okay, I just listed 10 players that are in the last year of their contract. They can turn that roster in a number of directions. The perception of the older players, it only applies to about three guys, right? You got Stamkos for three. Let's say five guys. I still have a lot of problems with Soros. I wake up at night still angry at all the non-Avengers out there. I still think 30 out of 32 GMs would have done exactly what Barry Trotz did, and that signed UC Soros. But every team has got guys signed to long-term deals. So that take by Gentry is, I guess a basic take, but you're still not telling me anything in that article that affects the 28-29 team. Tell me, who's blocked?
I don't think it's so much of who's blocked. And, you know, Jared did a great job at trying to, you know, just get out something. And you know, Barry stuck to, you know, what he said when he took the job, you know. So that they're trying to mesh this young and this old team. And I don't want to say old as in, it's almost a bad thing to say, oh, veteran team with the younger guys. They're trying to find a way to mesh it. I think the problem here was, and I agree with Estes on some of the Gentry on some of the things he said, because I was thinking the same thing. I think the problem here, or what has sort of made this thing the way it is that first year. That started because I asked this question of y'all the other day, I think through text. The process. Are you going to stick to the process, truly stick to it, or are you going to try to circumvent the process? And I brought that up because of something like this. When you come in as a new GM, and in your mind, you're thinking, okay, we're going to get these young guys. This is almost like a rebuilding year. In a sense, it was, because he started to trade away a lot of people. So it started to look like a rebuild, but then all of a sudden, on the second half, they started winning. So everybody in the building loves that feeling. So in the offseason, it's what can I do with the talent that we already have that was winning games and playing the way they were? What can I do as a GM to expedite that, to fast forward, when in fact you shouldn't have been doing that, in a sense? So you go out and you get three guys in free agency that had really good seasons the year prior.
Yeah.
And you go out and get them, and you think, okay, with these young guys and what they did the second half of the season, mess with these older veteran guys, this should be a playoff team. Well, it's not. So now the question is, do you continue down this road? Or do you say, you know what, we're just looking to 27, 28, somewhere around down the line for playoffs? You can't do that now. In a sense, you can't do that. But I like how Barry answered the question. We're still trying to win now, but there is an eye on the future. Whereas 2 years ago, the eye was solely on the future, but because of the way those young guys played, you almost got this false sense of, okay, we are better than what I thought right. We were going to be.
I think it would have looked pretty strange if after that very encouraging first year, he pivoted and just did a full rebuild.
But if
that.
He would have
wanted to do that,
but if
I don't
he would have stuck
so.
With the pro, if he would have stuck went, with the process, I think it would have been a lot
here's
better.
One thing
it went horribly wrong last year. We mm-hmm. all agree. The question is, what do you do at this point? Is Gentry basically saying you should dump everybody and just see if you can just break it down to the screws or the, you know?
You in it now.
I mean,
they are boxed in.
But no, you're not boxed in. I just listed ten players, Willie. About half of your roster, is flexible in the last year of the contract,
you're
about to get off the hook on a lot of salary cap dollars that you're paying to Matt Duchene.
A lot.
So in next year, they will have a lot of flexibility.
A lot is riding on players who are aging out of their primes. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
They're not blocking the young guys.
Right. But the players you're mentioning are Michael Bunting and Michael McCarron and Colton Sissons. They are boxed in with Roman Josi. They are boxed in with Philip Forsberg.
Philip Forsberg. That's been the case for those are the franchise players.
That I'm presenting the counter argument. To Derek's point, I've always wondered this, and then we'll have to table this so we can get
right. And the Roman Josi thing, obviously, is a major question, which to me, that is a huge story as to what Roman Josi are we going to see in this next stage of his career with these issues that he's dealing with. But we can't wind back the clock and say, you should have not signed Roman Josi to 8 years.
No, we're not going
every
that far.
Every team has those guys.
No,
look at every roster. Go to capwages.com, go to each roster. I will show you a group of six or seven players that teams invest in the long-term contracts. And they're not getting great return on their investment right now, but there's nothing you can do about that.
So that happens. So I think if I want to make sure I'm summarizing Derek's point correctly, and then we'll table this to get to Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. I've always sort of wondered, it's like a butterfly effect type thing. What would have happened if the Predators hadn't gone on that 18-game point streak? What would have happened had the Predators missed the playoffs that season? Would the Predators have signed Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, and Brady Shea? We'll never know the answer to that.
Well, the answer is no.
I think that's what Derek
is saying.
And
that's what I'm saying. You're circumventing the process all because
they thought they were ahead of schedule.
And if you look at it, you were not. You truly were not ahead of schedule. Now, adding maybe one guy to the mix, okay. Yeah. But you added three guys with contracts, even though they're not blocking the other guys. But eventually, nobody, unless there's a package that is just going to blow, nobody's going to want these guys. Not because they don't think they could play, but because they're aging out. So you try, and this is what my thing was. When you try to circumvent the process that you came in with, then you may end up at a point where now you got to stay in it. Whatever decision you chose to make after that one season, you may have to play it out, whether it be good or bad. And I'm not talking about blocking a younger guy.
I would tell you this quickly, that the choices were try to, quote, as you're saying, circumvent the process, which is try to win while you rebuild. The other option is to stink for 7 or 8 years. I don't like that. I like having a chance. I like having hope. This year, I'm not sitting there going, they're going to win the cup. I have hope, though, that if it goes right, they could have a good season, which would mean maybe getting back to the playoffs, maybe making a little noise in the playoffs. You never know what can happen. I know that if they had gone the other way, we'd be sitting there going, hey, you know, maybe they'll have 80 points and maybe they'll get the high first-round pick again. That's a long, long road.
Let's table this. We have some reaction. We'll continue it after Scott Wheeler of The Athletic, the NHL draft analyst, will join us coming up next. 615-737-1025. If you have thoughts on this, get them in now. We will get back to them after Scott Wheeler. 615-737-1025. This Friday, join us at Bridgestone Arena for a party like no other and celebrate the future of Smashville at the Nashville Predators 2025 NHL Draft Party. More details at thegamenashville.com/events. Catch 1025 The Game's Draft Night in Smashville on Friday starting at 6 p.m. powered by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 429. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by The Athletic's NHL draft analyst, Scott Wheeler. Scott, glad to have you back on the program as the NHL draft kicks off on Friday. Yesterday, you unveiled your final mock draft of the 2025 season, and you have the Predators taking Porter Martone, the 6'3", 208-pound winger, who had 98 points, including 37 goals in 57 games, for Brampton of the Ontario League last season. What more can you tell us about the Predators' interest in Martone throughout the draft process and why you feel he is their guy at that spot?
Yeah, it's been a name that I've heard a lot sort of late in the process. I know that the Predators were around Brampton and their new arena in Brampton, well, old new arena, but their relocated arena in Brampton after the move from Mississauga slightly down the street to relocate the Steelheads for his draft year this year. I know they were in the building a lot. I know they have expressed a lot of interest in Porter over the course of the season. And you watch enough of Porter and you can see why he would be a natural fit for a team like the Predators, who are dying for a premium top of the lineup forward prospect, really one that they haven't ever had in the history of their organization, with all due respect to Philip Forsberg and David Legmond and some of the forwards that they've picked high. The true premium pieces that have come through Nashville have been Roman Josi and Seth Jones and Shea Weber and sort of on the blue line. And now is an opportunity, drafting as high as they are, which has also been a rarity for them as an organization over the years, drafting as high as they are, now is an opportunity to add a sort of truly, truly high-end player. There are a few there that I think they would consider. I think they should and will consider James Higgins out of Boston College. James is a high-end, high-skill centerman who would project potentially to be a first-line center for them someday, and certainly should be a top-six player for them someday if they were to take him at number five. But I've kept coming back, despite the quote-unquote perceived need within the Predators organization for a centerman, I kept coming back to Martone. I kept hearing Martone. He would add a little bit more size to their group. They do have some depth at the center ice position that's coming. Yegor Surin was their first round pick a year ago. Everybody was introduced to Fyodor Svechkov this year with the NHL roster a little bit. So they do have some young players coming down the middle. Obviously they have sort of good depth on the wing as well, whether that's James Higgins' Boston College teammate, Teddy Stiga, or Matthew Wood, who everybody has been introduced to now a little bit. But they've got good depth within the pool, good depth within the organization. There should be waves of young talent on the way, Tanner Molendijk on the blue line, et cetera. But Martone would give them their top prospect, and it wouldn't even be close, frankly. And I'm a big, big believer in Tanner Molendijk, but just a true cut above that. So would James Higgins, for that matter. But Martone is the name that I've heard linked to them more often than Higgins in the last few weeks here.
So let's stick with James Higgins for a moment, Scott, because yesterday we shared your mock draft on the air and we received a lot of reaction about how Predators fans, they want a center. And you said that the Predators, there's a perceived need at center. How wide is the gap between Porter Martone and James Higgins? I know you and some of your colleagues at The Athletic did a big board today. I know they don't necessarily play the same position. But overall, how wide is the gap in your mind between Porter Martone and James Higgins in terms of their overall talent and their NHL prospects?
In my mind, it's very close. I have James Higgins third on my list and Porter Martone fourth on my list. So they're back-to-back. They're both grouped within the same tier. I am, after having just said that I expect that it's more likely that they'll take Porter Martone, I actually have James Higgins a little bit higher. I would advocate, if I were sitting at that draft table, for James Higgins as the selection. But I can understand the arguments either way. Higgins is smaller. He's listed at 5'10 and a half. He's probably going to play at about 190 pounds. He's now up into the 180s after playing most of the last 3 years in the 170s. So he's added some weight. I know that's been a focus for him. Still plans to add another 5 or 8 pounds before he gets to his NHL playing weight. Going to be a competitive sort of well-rounded player, despite the fact that his game is sort of tilt towards offense and skill and playmaking and his skating and his hockey IQ, which all get among the highest grades in the draft. I do think he's an underrated competitor, a sort of better, more competitive player than he got credit for from some scouts who saw him play at times against bigger opposition this year. And he did struggle against some bigger opposition in college hockey over the course of this season. But the case for Martone is a simple one. It's that he's bigger. He's more physically sort of developed. You run into Porter Martone around the rink and he looks like he could step into an NHL dressing room tomorrow from a physical standpoint. Obviously Hockey Canada recognized that when they had Porter be a part of the Men's World Championships this year. Porter doesn't have the skating, the dynamic skating that a player like James Haggins has. One of the sort of criticisms or knocks, if you will, on Porter Martone is sort of his pace of play, that he doesn't play with quite the same pace that some of the other top forward prospects, Haggins included in this draft class, can play with. Teams over the course of this season wanted to see him be more consistent from shift to shift and night to night in terms of his own competitiveness. Though I don't think that's an issue. Porter is a very competitive kid. He's worn the C for different teams over the course of the years. He's dropped the gloves in the OHL. He finishes his checks. It's more about just keeping his feet moving and being more involved on a consistent basis for Porter. Both of them project as first line players in the NHL. I think if Haggins is to stick at center, he may end up as more of a 2C on a contending team than a true 1C on a contending team. But when I think about James Haggins, I think about Logan Cooley of the Utah Mammoth. And Logan Cooley is obviously a first-line player for the Utah Mammoth and had a 70-plus point season for the Utah Mammoth a year ago and is one of the bright young players in the world. So I think you look at James Haggins and you look at a player who's on a similar path to that, that can become a top-of-the-lineup center, maybe isn't the 100-point guy that every team wants, but has the skill level and the craft and the creativity and the hockey sense and the skating to project into a point-per-game, top-of-the-lineup player. Now, on the flip side, I think Porter Martone also has that just as a winger and in a bit of, well, in a much different mold, frankly, as a player. So it'll come down to preference. It'll come down to what the Preds feel about their organization in terms of the size of their pool and whether they might view James Haggins as a little bit too small for the complexion of their team. And then there was another name that I'll add to the list that I heard after my mock draft dropped yesterday, and that's Brady Martin's name. And Brady is really in that mix from 4 to 7, an ultra competitor who would fit with Zachary LaRue and some of the other players that that the Predators have drafted and brought into the organization in recent years. But Martin maybe doesn't have the high-end skill or the high-end point production projectability that a player like Porter Martone or James Haggins has. But what Brady Martin does have is sort of the motor that never stops, the most physical player in the draft, the most competitive player in the draft, the fiercest competitor in the draft. Use whatever cliche you want. That's sort of Brady Martin's identity.
Talking to Scott Wheeler. And Scott, we put a lot of stock in your mock drafts. And I'm really curious, as you adjust, you know, because it's changed a little bit. I can remember reading one you did while the season was still going on, then sort of one in between where we last had you on. And there's little tweaks. I'm curious, is it more you trying to drill down on what you think teams are looking at? What has you shuffling your lineup a little bit at this stage?
Well, there are sort of touch points over the course of May and June where there are natural points to engage with teams and sort of source new information. There are natural points to engage with agents. So I always sort of do three mocks, and I do them at three of the exact same timestamps in the calendar, if you will, each year. So I do one coming out of the draft lottery when there's a natural point to text some sources and text whether it's coaches of these players in terms of asking them which teams they've heard from the most over the course of the season, or general managers of these players at the junior level, or their agents, though you have to take agents with the requisite grain of salt, or even NHL scouts and sort of what they've heard about the teams around them. The natural points for that are coming immediately out of the draft lottery. Obviously the combine in Buffalo, which I attend every year and is a sort of gold mine for, if you will, for reconnecting with some people. And then obviously the last one, which is the week sort of right leading into the draft, which is when this most recent mock sort of dropped. So I'll hear different things over the course of that period. I'll have agents giving me shouts about their guys. I'll have sort of come back and forth with scouts for my scout survey that I do and all sorts of things that sort of produce the information that I'm looking for. And then it's about putting the conflicting things I've heard sort of in a web, if you will, and trying to navigate who I trust and where I think things will go. And then also considering what I know about each prospect pool's needs and each scouting department's preferences and all of that. So a complicated web. I was really, really proud of my mock draft a year ago for 2024. And I think I've got a really good handle on this year's, but it's always a game of who can you trust and sort of weighing different things against each other. And in this draft class in particular, I mentioned this in my mock draft, but there are 8 players that everybody tells me aren't going to get past the top 7 teams in terms of 6 Philadelphia and 7 Boston. I keep hearing that there are 3 different guys that those 2 teams won't let sort of slide past them, and yet one of them has to, right? So
right.
It's also sort of piecing that together. This draft very much is a draft class that has emerged with a consensus 8 players at the top, and yet there are 7 teams that I think are interested in various ways in those 8 players.
Scott, Barry Trotz did a press conference yesterday and also did a one-on-one interview with our station. And he did some talking about Roger McQueen. He talked about him as sort of a wild card. I noticed you have him 10th, but Barry Trotz was obviously very intrigued with him. And he laid out all the things you have about the injury and everything like that. But the upside seems to be very high with him.
Yeah, had McQueen been healthy, 2 very good hockey names that I've got mixed up there, Roger McQueen and Porter Martone. How about that for an NHL hockey player? But no, McQueen has been a source of fascination throughout this process. He originally hurt his back over a year and a half ago, 2 winters ago. There were 3 different stints that he came back and sort of the back issues lingered. And he had mentioned to a reporter about a year and a half ago that it was a herniated disc. And then he says now that that was misdiagnosed and that it's actually less serious than that. And herniated discs get people's backs up because of the way that they can linger over the course of their careers. And the many NHL players that have dealt with them and really battled back issues over the course of their careers. And then you get to the finish line, and ultimately he's now back skating. He participated in a testing at the combine, which was important for him to showcase that he was there physically. And you've got to make that calculation for each organization as to, okay, this kid coming into the draft year, had he been healthy, was probably a top 5, top 6 pick in the class. And where's our comfort level? Is it at 6, 7, 8? Is it at 9, 10, 11? I think that's the decision that a lot of those teams in that sort of 5 to 10 range are having to grapple with. If you were to get to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who now have back-to-back picks at 11 and 12, I would fully expect that that's the floor for McQueen, that he doesn't sort of slip past the Penguins, who I know have expressed interest in Roger this year. But I expect him to go in front of that. I think the Anaheim Ducks at 10 would strongly consider him and could bring some of that risk into the fold, given the strength of their established sort of young core and prospect pool. I think the Seattle Kraken at number 8, the Sabres at number 9 are all teams that could and will strongly consider McQueen. I'm less convinced, I should say, that he'll break into that sort of top 7 group that I talked about. When I hear about those 8 names that aren't going to get outside of the top 7 picks, he's not one of those
okay.
8 names. And I think those 8 names will go in front, are more likely to go in front of Roger than they are to go behind him. But I think he's very much in the mix at 8, 9, 10, 11.
All right, real quick, do you think we're having Vern Fiddler on our show tomorrow? We would love the story of Vern's son, Blake, who I think was born in Nashville, if I'm not mistaken,
yep,
going to the Preds. Any shot there?
Not out of the question. They obviously have 2 picks in the 20s, and that's Blake's range. He's going to be a 20s pick in this draft. They also sort of could use a player of his profile. I talked about Tanner Molendijk off the top. He's the opposite handedness of Tanner Molendijk, so you immediately wonder whether, hey, this WHL kid and this other WHL kid, both great skaters, both opposite handedness, could they maybe someday be a second pairing for you, right? And they're also very different players, despite being plus level skaters. Molendijk is a much smaller player. Molendijk's about 5'11", 6 feet, and an elite skater. Blake Fiddler is 6'4", 6'5", and a very good skater. Molendijk plays a much busier, aggressive game in terms of transporting pucks all over the ice and using his mobility to jump up into the play and playing tight gaps. Blake plays a more passive game, has less offense in his game. And you immediately start to wonder, okay, maybe these 2 kids could complement each other. Maybe Blake could be a good complement to a player like Molendijk someday. So I'd be surprised if Blake's not in that mix for them. Would not be the least bit surprised if they pick him, whether it's at 22 or at 26 with either of those selections. I think Blake belongs right there in that range. Blake is never going to be a power play quarterback in the NHL, I don't think. The criticism of him, or one of the sort of areas of development for him from NHL scouts that you constantly hear about, is just his puck play. He can be a little stilted with the puck. He doesn't have a ton of natural offense, but he's 6'5", and he can skate, and he's got a good head on his shoulders, and he's by all accounts a great kid. And I did a feature on him at The Athletic this year and could see that in some of the reporting that I did about him as well. And he just projects to have a very long career. And really, the game is trending in the direction of players like Blake Fidler, who are just sort of steady, reliable, lengthy, mobile defenders. That's the way that the St. Louis Blues were built when they won their Stanley Cup. It's the way the Tampa Bay Lightning were built when they won their Stanley Cup. It's the way the Vegas Golden Knights were built when they won their Stanley Cup. That premium of size and skating goes a long way in the NHL today. And he's got that, even if he's maybe never going to have a 40 or 50 point season as a sort of first round pick defenseman.
Scott Wheeler, The Athletic's NHL draft analyst, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Scott, thank you so much for your time. I know this is a busy week for you. Enjoy the festivities, and we will catch up soon.
Cheers, fellas. Can't wait to get down to LA tomorrow.
Scott Wheeler joining us on the program. A lot to react to there, and we will do so coming up next at 615-737-1025. Your reaction as well on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This week's Nashville's best deal is Red's Hot Chicken. Red's Hot Chicken on West End is bringing the heat. Don't miss their hot chicken and waffles or the mac and cheese crunch wrap. Grab a $30 gift card now for only $15 while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. By the way, it appears our phone lines are a bit wonky right now. So if you want to react, text us. 615-737-1025. We'll figure out what's going on with the phones. Thank you to Scott Wheeler of The Athletic for joining us. Really interesting conversation. It really does sound, Willie, that Porter Martone is the Predators' guy. If it shakes out the way that Scott Wheeler thinks it's going to shake out, and Martone is available at 5. A big-bodied winger, 6'3", 200-plus pounds, had nearly 100 points in juniors last season, 30-plus goals. Predators need all of that. But I certainly do think there's going to be a lot of reaction if Martone is the pick, from Predators fans saying, he's not a center! We need a center! I do think that's inevitable, but some really interesting notes on there, especially comparing Martone and Hagans in different areas.
Yeah, I think Martone and Hagans are probably getting the most discussion for those that are following it close. And, of course, they don't pick till 5, so there's a chance that one or both could get picked or something like that. Look, I'll be honest, and I'm the announcer for the team. I haven't watched these guys play, right? It's not like NFL football where you're like, yeah, you know what? I saw Cam Ward play a few times.
I'll be tuning into the NBA draft.
We saw him play, right?
I'll be tuning into the NBA draft tonight. I'll know all those guys.
Right. Well, I don't know all of them, but I watched a lot of them. That's not the case in the NHL draft. So if you're arguing for a certain guy, are you telling me you watched the guy play? No. arguing about a center, you're just arguing philosophy. You don't know the person. You haven't been scouting these guys. So I try not to weigh in real heavy on one guy or another, right? Because I listened for some things that Barry said. He said there might be some guys, and I think based on the description of Wheeler there, Martone physically might be closer to being able to handle the rigors of being in the NHL at age 18. Mm-hmm. And some guys aren't that physically mature yet, but you're projecting down the line when they are, they might have a higher ceiling. That's a really important question. To me, that's what I'm thinking about. And Barry Trotz said there are some guys that might be closer to being ready now, but there might be some guys that 3-5 years from now, which is way more important, mm-hmm, might have a higher ceiling, but they're not the type of guy that are going to jump right into the lineup right now. I think Jared specifically asked Hagans, a guy who's already played a year of college, if you drafted your number 5 pick and he went back to college, would that be somehow disappointing? But to me, that's not. I'm not worried. Anything that this kid, whoever they pick at 5, would give them this year would be gravy to me. The question is Jared's vision of the 28-29 Predators, which is a really important year. That's an important year.
Well, Predators fans, Derek, we talking about the importance of center. If you have been a Predators fan since the franchise became the Predators nearly 30 years ago, you've been lusting after that top line center for basically the entire existence of the Nashville Predators. And you watch all of the teams who, all of the teams that you consider competitive in terms of actually having a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And you see Alexander Barkov, and you see Connor McDavid, and you see Nathan MacKinnon, and you see these centers who were drafted high, and Predators fans are not the only ones saying, man, how can I get myself one of those? Mm-hmm. And the Predators, as we know, have not had the opportunity to pick this high very often. It's happened how many times, Willie? Three times, right?
This is the third.
In
it's
the
only
history
happened
of the
twice
franchise.
To this point.
That the Predators will have a top five pick. The first time in more than 10 years. The last time they took a defenseman, because as we discussed yesterday, nobody thought Seth Jones would make it to four. But he did. The Predators took the best player available. And, of course, they took David Legault. So Predators fans haven't had that center. So I think there are a lot of Predators fans that, let's just say James Hagan. James Hagan's for the purpose of this argument. They're like, James Hagan's can be that guy for us, hopefully. I think that's why a lot of Predators
right.
fans are hyper-focused on them taking a center
right.
instead but, of a winger.
But what this I did mention this yesterday, so I'm going to mention again. These kids are 18 years old. James Hagan's is a center now. Is he a center for life? Maybe. Have you watched him play?
I can't say I've watched a single meaningful shift of hockey that James Hagan
has
played.
Now, you hope that he is. So this is all philosophical, okay? None of us are evaluators of 18-year-old hockey players. I'm not. But there are plenty of guys in other sports that you hope when you draft them they are a center. Matthew Wood was drafted as a center. Right now, I would tell you that there's a very good chance that Matthew Wood ends up being a winger. And there's nothing wrong with that if he ends up being a really good player. You hope a lot. It's just like I said yesterday with shortstops in baseball, tackles in football, corners in football. You hope that they stay at that position because it's more of a premium position. But you can move them to another spot and still get a lot. So that's the caveat. So that you say, I've got to have a center. I've got to have a center. Well, that center could end up being a wing in about 3 years. There's a lot of them. Philip Tomasino was drafted as a center. Hasn't played center at all in the NHL.
I think Barry Trotz made this point before we bring in Jonathan Hutton on the other side. I think Barry Trotz made this point during his news conference yesterday, talking about the positional preference. And he brought up Brady Tkachuk, who was drafted with the fourth overall pick in the 2018 draft. We all saw Brady Tkachuk during the Four Nations faceoff. That guy is an animal, right? He's a winger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The player drafted directly in front of him, Barry did not mention his name. I think it may have escaped him. Jesperi Kotkaniemi is a center. Kotkaniemi has never lived up to the expectations of being the number three overall pick in the NHL draft. He started in Montreal. I believe he was offer sheeted by the Hurricanes.
Correct.
And it has never worked out for Kotkaniemi. He has not lived up to that billing.
But he's a good player.
Yes.
But he's not great player.
Which is your point.
Right.
Like if you're focused on the center, you may miss out on a player who's more talented, even if he's not a natural center.
100 out of 100 would take Brady Tkachuk over Kotkaniemi, and they would be like, why are you even asking this question? But that might have been the thinking, hey, Kotkaniemi's a center. Brady Tkachuk's not a center. We need a center. How dumb does that look now? Brady Tkachuk is a great player. So if that's the argument, then you have to consider that.
Barry said whatever falls to him, they're going to get a good player, he feels. Whether it's a center or someone else, he feels the position that they're in, the guys that they've scouted, they are going to get a good player. Now, whether it's a center or not is yet to be seen. But I think a lot of people want someone – that can play now. They understand that, you know, more than likely, we won't see this guy for another, at least 4 or 5 years. really getting to the, you know, on the roster and start making real strides. I think the fan base wants somebody that they could look at and say, he can play now at that position. Now, whether it happens or not, yet to be seen, but to have, and I don't want to, because maybe y'all can help me with this, Willie, after we finish talking with Hutt. Do Predator fans, me included, do we really understand that hockey is different from any other sport? That you draft a guy second, third, fourth, fifth overall, you may not see him.
I don't think it really goes into the casual
exactly.
fan.
That's what I'm saying. Do it really resonate with them? Because they're looking at it like, we want somebody that can play now.
It rarely happens.
Exactly.
It rarely happens. We discussed this the other day. Since 2000, there have been four players drafted fifth overall who have appeared in at least 10 games for the team that drafted them the following season. Four players in the past 25 years drafted number five overall. So,
and of those four, I can't remember exactly the
names. Kessel, Luke Shen, Elias Lindholm, and Noah Hanifin.
Yeah, and I'd have to look at the stats, but I don't remember any of those four guys being instant, like, rookie of the year impact guys.
I don't think so. I'll have to go back and
look. We'll have to look.
615-737-1025. We will take a Predators breather, bring in Jonathan Hutton. I smell collusion in the NFL. We will discuss that with Jonathan Hutton and more. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.